You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Back, and we'll remember Hank Aaron in the final hour, who passed away earlier today at the age of 86 years old. Let's get some calls in before our guests come back. And Dennis is in Colorado. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Paul. I have what I think is a unique perspective on Hank.
Sure.
I've been very sad all day. I've been watching television all day. And in 1966, their first year in Atlanta, I was a bat boy for the Braves and probably polished his shoes, his cleats, 81 times over all the home games.
Oh, my goodness.
And got to know him a little bit, as all the bat boys do, but I want to tell you something unique. Of all the famous things about Hank Aaron, you know what might have been the most famous one?
No.
Well, trying to sneak a fastball past Hank Aaron. Kind of like trying to sneak the sunrise past a rooster.
No, you couldn't do it.
And so the point I want to make is, ironically enough, it was also the first year of the expansion Atlanta Falcons, who were in the clubhouse right down the hallway, and one of my jobs was to clean that one as well. And I walk in there, and there's like 30 footballs in a great big basket. So I grabbed one. And I took it back. This was early in the afternoon, maybe 3 or 4 o'clock for a 7:20 game. And I'm playing around with a football when I should have been working. And Hank Aaron says, "Throw it to me." And I did. And to make a long story short, for about the next 10 minutes or so, Hank Aaron and I threw that football through the clubhouse, just having fun.
Well, that Dennis, how old were you back then?
16 years old.
What an amazing story, and what an amazing memory, and so many memories, whatever the age was back then. Thank you for sharing that. Someone who covered Hank Aaron's quest to become the home run king is joining us now, our friend Buddy Martin from down in Gainesville. Buddy, distinguished newspaper career, to say the least, longtime newspaper man and sports editor, and now he joins us now. Buddy, good evening. Thanks so much, and what a day for people like you and all of us who lived in the era of Henry Aaron.
Yeah, when you've been around a while, and hello, Paul, nice to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on. I know you're tight today, so I'll try not to talk too long-winded. I mean, you had a great guest there, and Bill Walton, and he's worth the time. But no, it hit me today. There are a lot of people dying these days who are my age or slightly older. I'm not Hank's age, but I'm of that generation. And I don't know why, but it hit me really hard today. And I started thinking about, everybody thinks they've got a Hank Aaron story, or they think they know something about the person others don't know, because it's a personal thing. So I racked my brain. I don't have any columns or articles I wrote back then, but I remember distinctly one day when I was covering Hank's quest to beat Babe Ruth. I was working at the St. Petersburg Times, a very fine newspaper, by the way. And I was on the road a good bit, and I went on the road in the fall of 73 for, I don't know, probably 10, 11, 12 days waiting for Hank to hit the home run. He tied the record, of course, and that meant he would break it next year. And of course, that meant April, we were going to all be following him around every city, which we did. Everybody wanted him to break in Atlanta, naturally. There was an occasion which I have a hard time remembering exactly, Paul, where I had him alone for 20 minutes, believe this or not, in a locker room. That would never happen today, of course. I just happened to be fortunate enough to be in this locker room when he was in a talkative mood. And I spent 20 minutes with him. This is before he broke the record, obviously. And I got into a conversation with him. And I was so fascinated by his conversation. And I knew a little bit about Hank Aaron. I didn't know everything about Hank Aaron. But we all know with the pressure he was under, with the thousands of hate mail letters he got every day. We know about that. We all know he was just a tremendous baseball player, probably the single most underrated baseball player of my lifetime. If you look at his numbers, as someone said today, I believe it was Ralph Wiley. His stats, when you measure them, he beat everybody. My favorite player was Stan Musial. I think he was, Musial was second to Aaron in bases, total bases. And he said, but he was 12 miles behind Hank. 12 miles behind Hank. Not to mention power. He was a gold glover. He was, you know, he was a terrific power hitter, hit for average, but most importantly, he was a man who was so gracious and so full of grace. And that day that I was fortunate enough to stand in his locker and hear him talk about a number of things, not the least of which, Paul, was while he was going through all this stuff, he also thought he had cancer. He kept waiting for the test to come back. He thought he had colon cancer. And he's going through that pressure. We talked about African-Americans in baseball. We talked about a lot of things. And it was just such a great pleasure for me, an honor to be standing with the great Hank Aaron. And look how he's handled himself since then. I heard Bob Costas talk about it earlier. Stories he's telling. Hank would go up in his attic and get all these letters out that he saved, the ones that were hate letters. And he'd read them and he'd pray for those people. I mean, I know it's when you eulogize people, you tend to exaggerate. There's nothing been said about Hank Aaron today that I would think was an exaggeration. He was everything they say and more.
Buddy, in just a couple of minutes that we have left, you know, we're talking about 1973, 1974.
Correct.
Most people would assume we're talking 10 years after Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, that the South was an easy place to live, but it was not. Mm-hmm. And no. What was that part of it like for hanging?
Well, it was something, I mean, I didn't live in his skin, so I can't tell you exactly, but I know this much, that he was, as someone said, he was attacking a record of an iconic figure in baseball that we all loved, who was white, by the way. And a black man. And, you know, obviously, we were not even at a point yet where we could actually say that we were proud of how we accepted black athletes, let alone the things he went through in the minor leagues. He played in Jacksonville and whatever. And he just was a guy that made up his mind he would never be deterred. I look at that film of him running the bases. By the way, I was typing on my Texas Instrument machine that night. I would follow him all over the country. And at that moment when he hit the baseball, I was looking down at my TI, and I missed the swing. I remember the loud noise. And I remember Dave Anderson writing about the sound of the home run. And then that night, he hit 715. There were two young guys that followed him around the base paths. And their names were Britt Gaston and Cliff Courtney. They were 17 when he broke the record. And years later, he actually met with them. And he said he was so glad. The kids got thrown in jail that night, but it got out the next day, and they weren't punished. And he said, you know, and Hank said he was so glad nobody got hurt and the kids didn't go to jail. And he said, the quote was, the older you get, the more you think about it. I'm just glad things worked out the way they did. It could have been a lot worse. They were really having fun with us as kids. They didn't get beat up and all that. They just spent 2 hours in jail. Other than that, it was a happy moment. Typical Hank Aaron.
Amazing memories of Henry Aaron. Grew up in Mobile, Alabama. passed away today at the age of 86. Buddy, thanks for sharing those stories. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul, for having me on, and RIP to the great Hank Aaron.
You got it. Wow, what a day. We will take a short break. It's been a busy one. We had Candace Story Lee on earlier talking about the week that she has experienced with one of her athletes introducing the vice president at the inauguration, the Pruitt conundrum all week long, and we end with Bill Walton and remembering Henry Aaron. We'll take a short break. Your phone calls are next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And finally, we get back to the calls here, and Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Mr. Paul, how are you?
Mitch, we are doing great. Thank you for calling.
I haven't asked, how's your wife been doing?
She's doing great. You know, it's interesting, as you know, being in the healthcare field. But
right, right.
She's doing fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Thank you so much for that Bill Walton interview. Honestly, I've always kind of sort of thought he was kind of arrogant. But he came across so humble and so genuine for his love for John Wooden.
Yeah, you know, I will tell you, Bill Walton on television doing games is somewhat of an acquired taste. And I've always admired him, and that is because of my age, you know, living in his era. But, and I've interviewed him once or twice, but never like today. And, you know, the idea was to compare and contrast the dynasties. But, you know, once he got off on Coach Wooden, I mean, I could have sat there all afternoon and evening and listened to him. I mean, he gave
but
a...
What amazed me, and I know that they evidently were very close, but he almost knows every fact about that man's life.
Yeah, they... I'm glad he told that one story. It's one of John Wooden's most famous stories about, you know, Bill Wooden cut his hair, and he said, you know, and he basically said, Bill, we love you. You're the most, you're the key to the team. You're the captain. But are you sure you won't cut your hair? And he said, no. He said, well, we're sure going to miss you. and it's such a great story for any teacher, any coach, but. They talked to each other every day of the week. And what's interesting about John Wooden, and I certainly don't want to act like I knew him very well, although I did talk to him a few times, and I had his number. And I'll tell you this quick story, Mitch. A man named Gene Bartow succeeded John Wooden at UCLA. Coach Bartow had been at Memphis and played in that game I referenced. And later came to Birmingham and started a program there, and I became very close to him. And the night that Coach Bartow retired, I was writing the story for the local newspaper, and I just took a wild chance that maybe I could get Coach Wooden to react. And I call his number, and he answers his own phone, very distinguished. And I told him who I was. He said, "Oh, yes, I remember speaking to you in the past." Okay. And I told him, and he was very moved by Coach Bartow's announcement, and he went on for 20 or 30 minutes, which is interesting because, Mitch, I say this only to you, I didn't have 20 or 30 minutes. I mean, I was on a newspaper deadline, but I was also not about to tell the greatest college basketball coach of all time that I didn't have time to talk to him. So I very nervously was jittering and trying to type and compose my article as he told some stories, but it was remarkable. And he was at the time, I don't know, maybe 93 years old. He died at 99, as Bill said.
Well, let me ask you a personal question, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Who would know you that well to be able to biography you in an interview?
So you're asking who would
who besides your wife would be privy to?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. It's an interesting question, and I haven't really talked about this much because this project I'm involved with, this Hollywood sitcom, has gotten all the news. But there's another project currently going on that two Hollywood filmmakers are working on, a documentary of this program. And that is, I hope they find the right people when they do it. I have a number of close friends that I think could be pretty good.
Well, I'm going to tell you this now. I'm going to say goodbye and good weekend. I hope that eventually our friendship becomes such that I can at least tell some good stories too.
Well, but Mitch, I'll tell you what, don't lose that thought, because as this project began about a year ago, but with COVID, it was put on hold. But they are currently working on it right now, and I will make sure that they talk to people like you, and especially you, because you have said some of the most interesting and poignant things on this program, and I appreciate them and always enjoy our conversations.
You have been just a value that I cannot get over, and I share that with so many people in this country that they love you, and just I can't say enough. But anyway, you have a good weekend with your wife, and I look forward to hearing you on Monday.
You take care of yourself. Thank you very, very much. Great to talk to you, Mitch. Jim is in Memphis, and you are next up.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'm gonna follow the hodgepodge theme, I believe, because I'm gonna start off with a little basketball. I'm gonna switch to football and then finish up with baseball, if you'll just bear with me.
Sure.
I had the pleasure of meeting John Wooden back when I was in college, and ironically enough, I played football at University of Louisiana Monroe. Under John David Crow.
Oh, sure.
So I'm sure you're familiar with him, Bear Bryant.
Yeah, no, I got to know him. In fact, I interviewed him when he was in Monroe, when I spent my year in Louisiana.
Yeah, they don't come any tougher than him.
No, he was great.
God rest him. And ironically, I was in my last summer session in Monroe, and I was walking across, there's a bayou that splits the campus in half. And my father played football at Mississippi State. And one of his very, very good friends at the time was a guy by the name of Bailey Howell. And Bailey was a basketball player.
Oh, sure.
From Middleton,
Bailey wasn't just a basketball player. He was one of the great players ever. And didn't he play for the Celtics?
Yes, he played for the Celtics. I think he has 6 championship rings.
Yeah,
but,
no.
He and my father were very good friends. And I probably hadn't seen Bailey since I was a kid. And I'm walking across the bayou, and another very famous coach, Lenny Fant, who was at Monroe when I was there, he had a basketball camp every year. And across, walking the other way, is Bailey Howell, and he's walking along, and he runs out in the middle of traffic because he sees me. And I couldn't believe that he even remembered me. So I went over and started talking with him, and he had this older gentleman with him, and he said, "Jim, I'd like for you to meet John Wooden."
Oh my!
And I was blown away. I was like, "Holy cow! I am meeting like the god of college basketball." So it was a very unique experience for me to have met the man, and really he was just a gentleman. And you know, these guys that you grew up admiring, and you know, switching gears to football now, playing under John David Crow, you see these guys passing, and you learn so much from them, and you know, I retain so much from John David. Probably wasn't the best X's and O's coach, but he had that name recognition, and he surrounded himself with really fine assistant coaches. Johnny Robinson was one of our assistant coaches, and he was just recently inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
But, you know, with baseball, and, you know, you look at the passing of all these guys, me being a football guy, Kevin Green here recently, and of course, Hank Aaron. But one of the ones that really hit me hard was Lou Brock this past year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I got to tell you, and I know this is, you know, I don't want to steal the thunder away from all the Hank Aaron people, but I was in Houston, Texas once, and I was sitting in a bar, and I was kind of a historian of especially Louisiana athletes, and Lou Brock was from a little town right outside of Monroe called Collinston, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in this bar in Houston having lunch, and I look across the bar, and there's Lou Brock. And after a while, you know, we caught each other's eye, and I said, "Hi." And we talked, and I finally said, "Excuse me, sir, are you from Collinston, Louisiana?" And he just looked at me like, "How in the world did you know that?" And, well, Luke Collinston's about 15 miles out of Monroe, and everybody knew who Lou Brock was. Well, anyway, we ended up sitting there talking for a couple of hours. One of the most engaging men that I have ever met. But the funny part about the story is he told me this story. He said when he was originally playing in the pros, he started out with the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
And was traded to the St. Louis Cardinals after a couple of years in Chicago. He had gone up to Chicago to visit friends one weekend, and he had a Sunday afternoon game, had to leave Chicago. He's driving back to St. Louis, and a cop pulls him over because he was speeding. He was running late. So the cop gives Lou Brock a ticket and sends him on his way. So Brock gets to the ball field, gets up to bat, either gets on base with a base on balls or a hit, gets on first. He goes to steal second base. The umpire calls him out. It was a very close play. Brock gets up arguing with him, and the umpire says, "Brock, that's the second time I've caught you speeding today."
Oh, my goodness. What a story.
Now, I don't know if that's true.
That is amazing.
Lou Brock told me that himself. So I have to.
That is an amazing. No, I grew up in Memphis, and I was.
Oh, I know.
And the car. Yeah, because my dad, the Yankees were one of my teams, but I really was a Cardinals fan. Didn't want to tell my dad that. But so Lou Brock was royalty in my house. Hey, thank you very much for that call. That was remarkable. Let's take Tony here in Mississippi. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Tony, we are doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Paul, I know you're a busy man. I just got a couple things. Me and my wife, my family, want to offer our condolences, you know, to the Aaron family. We've been by to see this house where he was born at. They got the house made a museum out of it, if you're aware of it.
Oh, sure.
And made, you know, at Paul Bryant, I mean, at the Bay Bear Stadium, baseball stadium. They got Hank's house there in the parking lot. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but I've been to the stadium.
Yeah, well, the house, his actual house that he was born at is in the parking lot now. And you mentioned a coach earlier today, and I forget what team, Danny White. And was this Danny White, the same Danny White that played for Dallas Cowboys?
No. Danny White, it's a good question, by the way. Danny White was the backup to Roger Staubach. during the heyday.
Oh, okay.
But this Danny White, it didn't. I don't know whether he played football or not, but he is the athlete. I think he played baseball. He is the new athletic director at Tennessee, so it's not the same Danny White.
Okay, me and my wife got tickled because we kept, you know, googling old pictures. You know, when he played with Tom Landry and all.
No, he would be up in years. He would be in his probably 70s instead of I think 43.
And Paul, I know it's Friday, and I'll fix to let you go. But look, you got a good friend. He's my best friend, and he don't know it. Joe Tessitore, but the great announcer. But one of these days, we'd like to invite you and Joe and y'all's family to my house, and I'll cook you a best bone and ribeye, baked potato.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, Joe is one of the all-time restaurant connoisseurs. His brother, owns a restaurant up in Connecticut, and we went to it a couple of years ago. What a meal. I don't have time to tell it. Booger McFarland, myself, Brett Bielema, and Joe, and it was one of the most amazing nights. I think it's still going on. It was the longest dinner I've ever been to. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls the final 30 minutes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. It's great to have you here. Final 25 minutes or so on this Friday night. Eli is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Eli.
Yes. Hey, Paul.
Hey there. Thanks for calling.
How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
I just got a question about Tennessee's new AD.
Sure.
Do you think that he'll be a good fit at Tennessee, and what kind of coach do you think he'll be looking for the football program?
Yeah, I think, you know, fit's an interesting fit. I think fit is an overstated word maybe for an AD. I think it's more important for a football coach because that person is having to recruit. But I think what I know about Danny White, and I don't know him, I hear good things about him. It seemed like he was effective today at his news conference, but ultimately his credentials don't matter anymore. This hiring will matter a great deal, and you know who he brings in is going to shape the immediate future for Tennessee football. I think he'll bring in someone a little younger, offensive minded, you know, not a usual suspect, so to speak. But I don't know. I also believe he'll do it pretty quickly. You know, he's known about this job for a couple of days. There isn't an AD in America, a good one, I should say, who doesn't have a couple of names in his back pocket. He's already made two hires at UCF. He made hires at Buffalo. So I think Tennessee will have a coach very quickly.
Do you think Philip Fulmer was burnt out?
Yes, I do. I mean, if you read the separation agreement, he was clearly shown the door.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Yeah, appreciate it. And it pains me to see Coach Fulmer go out that way. But on the other hand, you've got a major scandal erupting on your campus. He was in charge. He made the decision to extend the contract of Jeremy Pruitt.
ultimately he is culpable. And if you're going to try to advance the program, it's easier and more efficient to do it with all new people. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Art, who is up next. Hey, Art. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Paul. It's always an honor to be on your show at any time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, those episodes of MASH, you know, where they just kind of go, there's no music, and they just kind of look at each other. You know what I'm talking about? My story here is, though, I was 5 years old when he slapped that dinger, and I felt like, you know, I could see my dad and my great-grandmom. She was from Memphis, and she loved the Braves, and we went over to her house to watch that dinger. But when I was a kid, we went to Sarasota out of Disneyland and watched on St. Patrick's Day. The Lightning was on the mound. Johnny Bench and Thurman Munson played. And didn't know the Cincinnati coach, but I sure did know Billy Martin. And he came around, and, like, I was thinking maybe I could get an autograph. He shook my hand and looked me in the eye and went on. And I was like, whoa. And I've always been a baseball fan. I'm worried about it. How about you?
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, listen, it's always good to hear from you. Mark is up next in Nashville. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Very well, thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to segue on that Tennessee coaching search. I think White did a good job today on it in his press conference, so pretty excited there. But I'm reading Vol Twitter today, and it is erupting about Lane Kiffin. What are your thoughts on that? Is that even a possibility?
No.
Is it the same thing as far as what Bruce Pearl happened to Bruce Pearl? Where
No. I don't think. Lane Kiffin is very hireable. Bruce Pearl wasn't. But I just don't think if you're trying to plant a flag and start anew, that bringing in someone who's already been there and left the program, even though it's water under the bridge, I would be shocked to see Lane Kiffin get that job.
I gotcha. Well, we'll hope they get a grand slam on this next coaching hire because we need it, and I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Not that I don't think Lane Kiffin is a great coach. I do, but I don't really believe he's leaving Ole Miss after 1 year. Chuck is up next in Virginia. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Paul. How's it going, man?
We're doing great. Thank you, Chuck.
Good. Hey, listen, a couple quick things. Really proud of our university. I'm a UT alumni as yourself, and really proud of the integrity they shown when they found out there was cheating going on. They immediately pulled the plug. And that shows a great deal of integrity, and I'm very proud of that fact. Happy for the hire today, and also living here outside of Richmond in Mechanicsville, Virginia. Tommy Aaron, Hank's brother, played baseball and managed the AAA team here.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Got to see him many, many nights play. And then Hank came through here, obviously, when they would play the Braves in an exhibition game in the spring. And the story with Bill Walton was he showed up at practice his senior year with the beard and the long hair.
Oh, that's right.
And he told Coach Wooden that he was going to exercise his freedom and he was going to have long hair. And Coach Wooden told him, well, Bill, we're really going to miss you. And he got on his bike, rode down the hill from Pauley Pavilion, and found the first barber shop, got a haircut, and got back as fast as possible.
Yeah, I forgot. I mean, I heard.
And I was also.
That is a great story. I'm glad you told it correctly, unlike me.
But also, Paul, I was at the in Alumni Hall the night that John Wooden spoke with the and I forgot what it was called.
Okay, well,
whatever we the student.
Yeah, no,
that's where.
Yeah,
committee.
That's where I heard that story for the first time. I was there too.
And me as well. And I've read many, many books about Coach Wooden, and I'm a former basketball manager on the Tennessee team when Ernie Grunfeld and Bernard played there. So,
my goodness,
just a tremendous time.
What year? What year were you
the
Chuck? What year were you the manager?
I was the manager in 76, 77, and 77, 78. So Coach Mears' last 2 years.
Okay, so obviously I probably was on a few planes with you since I was covering the team for the school paper.
Yep, with the Daily Beacon.
Yeah, no, it's people wonder about, you know, why I became the way I did. It was because of those 2 years.
Hey, they were good years and they were lean years, all within a 12-month period.
No, I one day we need to talk because I knew Ernie Grunfeld, I got to know Bernard well, but I would hang out. I would get to go to parties with Ernie, and the key was just acting like you knew Ernie at these parties because, you know, I mean, there were. You know, I don't want to offend anyone here, but Ernie never went to a party where there weren't at least 30 or 40 women hovering around him, and you just wanted to be in his presence at all times.
Yes, I attended a few of those as well.
Yeah.
Those
parties would have put anything in Beverly Hills after the Oscars to shame.
And I really thought the world of Coach Mears, you know, in later years when he would do the speaking engagements for the Alumni Association, and he would come to Richmond to speak to our group here, he always, regardless of who was sitting at his table, he always said, "You're sitting next to me."
And oh, that's great.
Coach Mears was a great man. He probably doesn't get the credit for being as good a basketball coach as he actually was. He's one of the greats in my mind.
Yeah, Chuck, I'm glad you said that because I have always felt that he did not get his due because of the way it ended, and he never advanced in the tournament. But in terms of influence – during that era, I would agree. I mean, after Coach Rupp, nobody, C.M. Newton, I guess I should say, but Ray Mears stood alone. Hey, thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. We are back for a few more minutes. We hope you'll come back with us.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.